Thank you. Good afternoon. And it's my great pleasure to be here. So thank you to KTP in general for organizing, to let us organize this program. It's a fantastic environment, very stimulating, and very special for people who are doing biology and being exposed to theoretical and physics type ideas and discussing on the board and in the free time. But also thank you for this opportunity, because this is quite special to give a short talk, you know, to physicists. That's a thing that I haven't been doing for a long, long time. So I hope it will go okay. The nice thing about short talks is that I can completely cheat you on the data, because you don't have slides. But there will be a little bit later. I'm part of the program for stress-free physics of stress regulation. And basically, the main question of this people in this program discuss how animal life features navigate in the environment using their senses. And I will tell you only a few words about navigation, basically, but my talk won't be about navigation. We're talking about one of the senses, about sense of smell. A sense of smell is one of probably three main senses that are sense environment removed. The animal navigates, it gives some information from far away, but local information, so it's vision, audition, and olfaction. Of course, animals using other senses like touch, taste, you know, proprioception, but in order to know where the object is, it needs to kind of extract information from far away. And you know, humans navigate using vision, we can turn around and hear some sound. Actually, olfaction plays a very special role, because it's probably one of the most ancient sensory system. And from bacteria to mammals, animals, all the creatures using chemical senses to navigate through the environment, and it's super crucial for survival. Because bacteria needs to eat, they need to avoid poison. You know, mammals and other animals need to find food, find mate, avoid some unpleasant smells. So we do navigate in the environment using our sense of smell. And but in spite of that, this sense of smell has been, you know, through kind of third life, through all evolution across all the animals, this is probably the least understood senses. When I say least understood, there's much more work done in vision and audition. And there's a lot of work done in bacteria chemotaxis, but in general, in how we navigate, what we extracted from the environment when we're smelling some odors, or what animal, how animal using this sense, is not yet well understood. This sense is kind of a big mystery in general. I would like to talk, so then the plan of the talk is the following. I'll give some introduction about the sense of smell. Then I will talk about some experiments in the lab, and then I'll propose a theory that has been developed. We've been working together with Alex Kulakov. I lost him. He's hiding. But he is, you know, it was fantastic time working with him, and it's our kind of dream work. And it just happened that I'm presenting it, but he's completely, he's one of the main leaders, basically, in this field. So, the sense of smell. Before going to talking about sense of smell, I would like to kind of make a substitute to our color vision. We understand actually quite well how color vision works, and I'll give you example why I'm talking about. Actually, color vision, the first idea is about three chromatic color vision, appears at the beginning of 19th century in the work of Young, and then it has been developed by Penrose. So physicists also participate in our understanding of sensory system. Now I will attempt to understand the olfaction with a perspective. So, Young actually proposed a very simple idea that if, in order to perceive colors, we need multiple receptors. But in order to have spatial resolution, we need to condition with multiple receptors close to each other. So, we have a trade-off between spatial resolution and color perception. So the number of color receptors should be small. That was his idea. And that leads to whole origin of great chromatic vision and the work of Helmut Holtz. And actually everything based on, you know, now we all well know that, you know, we have three receptors that have different sensitivity. This is the wavelength of the color. This is red, green, and blue receptors. And we know the property of the receptors, but from the receptors, we can actually can develop all the theory and come to the perception. This is a big step. And maybe those who read Feynman, and actually read it first time in Feynman, you actually saw this kind of diagram that you knowing the responses of the receptors or knowing how the color, you can predict the color. So red is not a wavelength. Red is a perception. Yellow is a perception. Wavelengths is a physical properties, is what you present to the eye. And the spectrum of the color can be very, very complicated. And the spectrum of reflection of this board is, different from spectrum of reflection of the floor. And we can see the color, but we have only three receptors. And we can basically, all the perceptual frame can be laid out on this diagram, where this, on the perimeter of the diagram, you have axis starting the monochromatic wave from 400 to 700 nanometers. And this area is taken by blue, this is red, this is yellow. So knowing the point in this diagram, you know the color. What's interesting is that if you have three sources of light, you can create any color inside of the source. And you can create this this source by multiple spectrum, multiple presentations. This is a fantastic piece of science, and I'm not going to talk about it. But the idea that we know the receptors, and from the receptors we're talking about perception. That also leads us to the idea that we have three receptors, and the dimensionality of the color space is two-dimensional, because we have three parameters. We excite one or three receptors, and if you scale on the response, we basically change the intensity of the color, but not color itself. So the dimensionality of the color space is two-dimensional. Now, what's happening with other, let's say, alpha function? Why I'm starting with it? Alpha function, we have almost 350 receptors. And each receptor is activated by multiple orders, and multiple orders activated multiple receptors. Same thing like here. Each receptor is activated by multiple wavelengths, and each wavelength may activate multiple receptors because the responses. So the code is combinatorial, and what we're trying to understand is the logic of this combinatorial code for our function. So let me give you a very brief introduction of how our function system works. My lab is working with mice, so this is, and mouse the function is very similar to humans, but actually the principle of function is very general across mice, flies, and other, from insect to mammals. But because my lab is working with mice, I will give some presentation and some respect to mice. So when odors get to the nose, and the nose has a very elaborate surface, epithelial surface, there's a lot of, you know, curvature, a lot of, you know, flux where the receptor cells are located, all these particular receptor cells. And receptor cell has a receptor neurons, receptor neurons have a receptor on its cilia, and when odors are attached to the receptor, receptor neurons are activated and send the signal via axon, some kind of thin wire, to the some area in the brain called glomeruli. And they are located in the first part of the brain called olfactory bulb, and we actually would not walk further than the olfactory bulb. So we have here approximately 5 to 6 receptor neurons, but all the receptor neurons come express one and only one type of receptors. Out of the big family of receptors, 1,200 receptor neurons. This is mice. In humans, it's 350. And another favorite organism that's often used by biologists is fly. Because it has a lot of genetics, and many people, actually majority of our group and the system navigation workshop working with insects, so it's very important. So the fly is only about 6 years. So the signal from this receptor, so other gets here, contact receptors, and send the signal to this so-called terminal. What's interesting here, and that's actually fascinating organizational system, that neurons that express the same receptor type, let's say red receptor type, converge to one block, one area in the brain, red domain. Those who have a different receptor type converge to different domain. Oh, sorry. And so, so we have so-called chain link of information. All receptors that have the same receptor properties gets together in the one block of the domain. I would so schematically, if we have got this field of biology, we have receptors here. Again, 10 to the 6, and they have a lot of conversion to one granule, to the granule. Oh, sorry, no. Like this. And this glomerula, this is dopamine, the field, correspond to one receptor type. Actually, there is more than usually one glomerula for the same receptor type, but we for now can ignore it. So from there, information going through the next level of the cells to the cortex, and some magic happens. And what's interesting that this structure is very similar in flies and mice and and humans as a mammal.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
What are the receptors? What do they detect?
I'll just talk about. I'll talk about it in a few seconds. So what's happening is, well, I should start with that. So, receptor is positioned in the membrane of the cell membrane, and it's pointing out to outside of the membrane. And when odor comes, it sends some feature of the odor molecule, and there's a confirmation that feature the cascade that lets the cell find the signal and send it along the information pathway.
But there are a lot of molecules.
Exactly.
Which ones does it, do they detect?
That's, I mean, that's exactly the question. So we have 1,200 different receptors that send something different. And there's a lot of work, you know, trying to understand the biophysics of this. I'm not going to talk about it. What we need to know, that different receptors send different features of the molecules. And maybe it's a number of carbons, maybe the size of molecules, maybe dipole moment, the shape. No. You can make a huge list of the different properties, and that's what actually sells, and probably all these features that correlate with activity of individual receptors.
Are they all organic?
Say it again?
Are they all organic molecules?
So when we talk about odors, we're talking about all molecules that are probably below 200 Daltons per molecule. Animals and humans can sense almost everything except inert gases and oxygen and nitrogen. Actually, we don't sense CO2, but insects do. So the rest of the molecules, organic molecules, are sensed and can be perceived by this subset, but not 1,200 receptors.
Thanks.
Oh, I didn't switch to. You hear me well? Maybe I don't want it. It's very good. So now, okay, so we have a human has 350 receptor types, mice and rodents have about 1,200 receptor types. So what's the problem? In general, the problem can be formulated in the following way. We have odors, and you know, we can count approximately a million of different molecules that are all a weight below 200, that is one table, 10 to the 6. And we have receptors and receptors. And 10 to the 6, let's say. So if we measure all this table, we kind of solve that problem all fast. So we know each receptor activated. You know, this odorant activity, this odorant activity, this and so on and so on. This is quite a dirty problem. I'm not sure that we want to solve or want to make 10 to the 9 measurements. But that's a problem. Do we have, what is the logic of the state? And in addition, the system has solved much more complicated problem because odorants are really presented in a pure way. Most of our odors are mixtures. And when you smell coffee, there's about 100 components with different concentration. So what make you, kind of, how you, on top of that, you need to respond to every single of odorant molecules and evoke independent perception. How you evoke independent perception of the mixtures? Because when you smell coffee or you smell apple, you don't perceive individual odors. So this is the general problem of how do we deal with that? How we understand the other environment, how we extract information, what the nose tells the brain about the environment. What we can do in this system? Actually, we can do experiments in individual receptors. We can patch receptors and then multiple organs. The problem with that, and that can be done a lot, basically can extract receptors, patch the cell, present an odor, and record that heat. The problem with that, that receptor cells make it a very different condition. And that's not how animals perceive the odors, because there's a lot of dynamics and a lot of interaction when odor gets to the nose and interact on the receptors through the mucus. Receptors are located in the mucus, so it's a very special condition. An alternative way to do it, we can actually take a mouse and open a window here, and through the genetic tricks and recent advances in the neurobiological methods, we can put fluorescent indicators that tells us that we'll change the fluorescence when some of the glomeruli got activated. So we can get an image from here. Of the specific odors, or the activation of specific odors. And what you will see, this will be one olfactory bulb, another olfactory bulb, and when you present another, you see the activation of a bunch of glomeruli, and it's more or less will be symmetric on both sides. And this this pattern is specific for specific odorant, and different odorant evoke different patterns, and we can study it today. Basically, we can start populating this this table. The problem with this approach, this is twofold. So the main problem with this approach is we more or less see only 15% of the all receptor types. Because the majority of the receptor types are located below the surface and we don't have immediate access to optical access. But even though we can kind of say something about odor coding by watching the top surface at about, you know, 150, maybe 200 receptor types on the top.
Is the topography of the olfactory bulb as well preserved as, say, the barrel cortex or the visual cortex?
What do you mean by topography?
So meaning that if glomerulus for a particular odorant, sorry, for a particular receptor is in a certain location in one animal, that it will be in that same location in another animal.
Actually, surprisingly, this map, this specific glomerulus that activated by odor X, it's very reproducible from animal to animal. It's not reproducible with a one glomerular precision, but one plus two glomerular precision is very reproducible. So the schematics between animals is very similar. Not on the glomerular by glomerular level, we can define without doing genetics, but general pattern would be very similar. What I asked you what you mean by topography, that if you present an order, and you present a different order, you case you cannot predict because position of these receptor types is very dispersed. We don't know, we don't understand the logic how neighboring glomeruli are related to each other. There's some general schematics, so some of the chemicals activate more some part of the bulb, another part of the bulb, but on a local scale, we don't know the logic of this process.
There aren't primary odors like there were primary colors?
That's a question that interests olfactory researchers for 150 years. Nobody so far was able to find primary odors that we can create an odor percept by mixing primary colors. And another question that I'm actually going to talk about is, how many of these primary basis odors do we have? Do we have a basis? Can we operate in the same way like we operate in the color industry? That is a subject of research, and this is maybe at the end of the lecture, I try to show how what do we know. We basically don't know much, but we try to understand exactly this problem. Yes?
Does the pattern change in development?
It is in...
That is, if you a child was exposed to various kinds of odors?
There's a lot of phenomena, so the position of the glomerulus more or less fixed from the development, but the activation of glomerulus as animal learning is maybe changing something, and then there's some different level of special receptors depending on the odor exposure, but that's secondary order of question. We try to understand it as basic and then see the changes. Well, we talk about this table, we try to understand the logic of the function. Now, as I said, each order evokes some different part of activity, but what actually I kind of cheated here a little bit, because when I said that order activated the specific pattern, I hided one very important feature. The order is presented on a specific concentration. And let's talk a little bit about the concentration of the odor, how it affects all this picture. In a very simple way, the odor receptor interaction can be kind of discussed in the very basic receptor interact with odor and create an odor receptor of kind of they create a complex odor receptor, and we can assign the affinity of this effect, we can assign the kinetic constant, and we can discuss how it depends. So I simplify this problem to the very simple level. In reality, there is a binding constant, unbinding constant, and maybe multiple effects. We simplify it to only one parameter k that we call affinity, and then the effect of concentration of the odorant can be described by mass action law and activity of the receptor will be written like this. So F is activity of the receptor, K is the activity of the receptor from 0 to 1, K is affinity, C is the concentration of the odorant. In the log concentration scale, this equation, this will be look like this. And this is log C efficient. So at specific concentration, basically if you present concentration below C threshold, it will be very low activity, above this threshold it will be high activity, and here where the activity goes from 0 to 1. All comes from the same. So the idea here that other ligand interaction is described only by one parameter, affinity. Or it's actually C threshold is 1 over K, since I will use it intermittently. So instead of talking here about how other activate receptors, honest way to talk about it is a matrix of affinities. Because if odor activates the receptor, depends on what concentration you present. And odor at a high concentration can activate some numbers, few hundred of receptor types. Odor at very low concentration, it can be the one of the most sensitive receptors. So we have a huge range of the activation, and actually, brain needs to deal with. So imagine we have one odorant, but we have multiple receptors. So what's happening? That multiple receptors have different affinities. And you can order them in the sequence of their activity. So this is the most sensitive receptor. This is less, and this is very less sensitive. Not very sensitive, but still can be activated by the odor. Okay. Now what's happening when I increase concentration of the odor? First, I excite these two receptors. These two receptors got excited, and these are not, and then I excite more and more and more and more. And if you're looking, kind of I'm moving this bar, and I excite more and more receptors, and for simplicity, what we can say, that if the concentration above the threshold, the receptor is active, if the concentration below the threshold, the receptor is not active. So coming back to this picture, so what actually we experience something like this. At a low concentration, you activate one receptor. You increase concentration, you activate two more receptors. You increase concentration, you activate more and more. Now, from this table, what we're dealing with is the following problem. At a low concentration, you activate these two receptors. At medium concentration, you activate the same two, plus, let's say, two more. And at high concentration, we activate six receptors, just for I wrote it symmetrically completely, I just break the symmetry like this. Okay. So now if brain or we as experimental are watching this pattern, we need to identify the order. One of the features of every single sensory system is to identify the object in the presence of other parameters. In vision you identify the face independently of the lightning. Or the angle and on and on. Vision is very complex computational problem. In our function, let's try to understand the very basic stuff. How do we say that this is coffee independently in the cup of here, here, or here? So we present different concentrations and we activate different number of receptors. The common feature of all three patterns is these two colors. Because these receptors are activated at the lowest concentration and activated at the highest concentration. One of the strategies, if you know that these two receptors are responsible for coffee, whenever you show them activated, you know this is the coffee. Or you know this is an apple, this is a banana. Now, but here's a problem, because if you activate this receptor, maybe these two are two that correspond to apple or two correspond to rose. How would you define these two receptors? How would you identify these two receptors in the pattern that appears in the glandular activity and receptor activity? And to approach this problem, we proposed relatively recently the trick that a sensory system may use. And the trick is the following. That receptors that are activated at the lowest concentration, these two the most sensitive receptors, are activated first in the sequence. So maybe the sensory system keeps track of the temporal structure of activation of the receptors. Ideas of the role of temporal structure have been proposed for, we were not the first to propose these ideas. In 1995-98, Hofeld actually, John Hofeld proposed the idea that the pattern of activation of the receptors tells you what the orders, but the timing, what are the concentration. Because if you present concentration earlier, the whole pattern moves earlier. Let me present the potential very simple physical mechanism that can be responsible for early activating of the more sensitive receptors.
I just want to make sure I understand. You're suggesting that higher affinity means lower latency.
Exactly. Again, as my favorite model is the mouse, what's going on when odor gets to the nose? In order for odor to get to the nose, mouse needs to inhale. And odor, differently from the image on the retina, doesn't appear instantaneously on the screen, on the retina, but concentration arises slowly. So if mouse, is mouse inhaling. So mouse is exhaling and then start inhaling. And at this moment it starts inhaling. Odors appear on the nose slowly. It's not instantaneously, and this time scale is about 100 milliseconds. Now, if the receptor is sensitive to this concentration, it will be activated here. Another receptor sensitive to this concentration will be activated a little bit later, and the more sensitive will be activated even earlier. So you create a kind of staggering time, sorry, this is even before, a receptor activation. Now, if you present a high concentration of the odorant, the same thing happens, but it goes to the higher concentration, but the slope remains the same, and you basically activate the same receptor earlier, and you activate a bunch of new receptors at high concentration. So the most sensitive always activated earlier in the sequence. And that allows animal to basically pay attention to the most sensitive receptors, and they ignore later one that are not sensitive. And in this way, say, aha, this is my coffee percept. Yes, questions here.
Does the firing rate of the receptor change according to the concentration?
Coming back to this graph, the firing rate of the receptors increases very quickly in a very narrow range. And basically, it does change, but it's changing in a very narrow concentration. A broader concentration kind of increases very, but basically not, but main effect is latency when it is activated. Yes?
So, for given type of receptor, you would measure for the, I don't know, thousands of different neurons that have this receptor, the same affinity, or is there also a range of affinity amongst?
Thank you very much. So if you're talking about a receptor of the same type, coming to the same glomerulus, they have a relatively narrow range of affinities. But receptor of different type may have completely different range of affinities. Okay. So we assume that the receptor type fully defines the affinity. We don't talk yet about variability. It's the next type of question.
So following your logic, which is essentially one way to think about the problem is that now you're clumping your detection system based on the phase of the sniffing. Mm-hmm. So this means that if you were to perturb who is activated within the space, you're suggesting that that would change the percept.
Exactly. So, basically, from now on, it was a leading question. Hakimi asked this question. So, from now on, I would like, express, we call this idea primacy coding. We just recently proposed it. The problem why it appears only recently, because for many years, researchers in the field observed these pictures and tried to analyze the whole combinatorial code. And kind of because we don't have access to temporal measurement, high precise temporal measurement, and because we don't know who actually the most sensitive receptor, we could not do the right experiments and kind of establish this idea earlier. So we recently proposed this idea that we call primacy coding model, that it can be formulated very, very simple. Order identity, independent of order concentration, order identity is defined by a very small number of the most sensitive receptors. This is the kind of idea that we call primacy coding model, and that's what we want to talk about. This was just all introduction. Now, the next two parts of the talk, I have two stories to tell. First, I very briefly explain what we're doing in the lab to bring some evidence how to prove that that's actually a valuable idea and to prove that actually with some perturbation experiment that actually pointed that how can we disturb it and prove it. And then other part, if I have time, because time running out, I would like to talk about can we take this idea and start building the alpha 3 space based on the fact that only a few receptors are activated. So I very briefly present the experimental story. Because A, it's published, B, it's. I would like to go to the theoretical part quickly. So the idea is that, unfortunately, we don't know who is the most sensitive receptor here, and we don't have a measurement who is activated first. So what we decided to do, we decided to do perturbation experiment. We decided to ask an animal, and we did the following experiment. Imagine I'll do the following experiment. I show one picture go left, another picture go right. All right. I keep the animal very seriously. If the correct answers, I give a drop of water. Left, right, left, right. I make it a little bit harder. I rotate the image, so animal need to do some computation. But then, if it's left hand go left, it's right hand go right. But then I would like to know how much information animal need to know. In vision experiment, it's very easy to do. I basically remove the image. I can show it for 1 millisecond, 5 millisecond, 10 millisecond. In olfaction, we cannot do this because as odor gets into the nose, it's an odor denier. It's very hard to control the odor denier. But what we can do a different option of this experiment. I show you the image, and then I will blind you with a very bright light. And then we can do it in olfaction with the tricks of the modern tools of optogenetics. What we did is the following experiment. We designed the animal that who knows about optogenetics in general, kind of from the physics community. So we designed an animal that expresses a very special protein called channel rhodopsin. That is, when you shine the light on this protein, it got cell activated. That's enough to know I'm not going to the body phase. So what I did, we designed an experiment that all the receptors here has not only olfactory receptor, but also this major protein. We presented an order and blast the light. And as I told you, so let me go here. So we know when we presented the order, because order gets to the nose, we measure the sniff. The order gets to the nose, and mouth starts inhaling, and this part when order is presented. And we measure this time by putting very small cannula in the mouse nose and measuring the pressure. So we know exactly when mouse starts inhaling and odor gets to the nose. And we blast a lot of light to the nose, like this. Now, if you blast the light to the nose very, very early, mouse has no idea what the odor has been presented because you activated a lot of receptors, there's no discriminability. If you blast the light 2 minutes later, mouse makes a decision. It's already far, far left. So now we can move the light closer, 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 and understand how much information, what is the temporal window necessary for animal to discriminate the order. We presented mouse with two orders, A and B, and it leaked, it get water on the left side, on the right side. Mouse leaked left, A, B. It can do it very, very robustly. We can get very nice behavioral experiment. We scrubble concentration of each orders, two orders of magnitude, from 0.01% to 1%. So orders are very different. It's your coffee here or your coffee here. It's even further away, two orders of magnitude. And we ask the animal, is it A and B? And occasionally we mask the order. We mask. Now, without mask, animal was able to perform a very high, so this is 50, this is chance level of performance, 50%, this is 100%. Without mask, animal was able to perform at a very high level, 95%. Why not 100? I don't know, but it's always, animal not always performing 100%. Now, as I said, if I blast the light very early, the chance level, then it go up, and the main question is, where it going up and where the situation happens. It happens about 100 milliseconds. This is a very short time interval, and what we know about the system, that some of the glomeruli, with our crude measurement of timing, got activated way, 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 way late. So some of the glomeruli get activated 300 milliseconds later, at the end of the sleep cycle. So what we establish, that to do this task, animal need to know only the beginning of the information flow. I already raised this question, so the most sensitive receptors. That's kind of, again, this is not a proof, because this is an easy task, it's order A, order B. I didn't answer the big question if it's order identity, but to order this question, I need actually to ask animal, it's kind of, I can ask a human, is it red color? Or is it blue color? I cannot ask the animal this question. I can ask the animal if it's a blue or reddish, and it makes a binary decision. But this is kind of an evidence towards the fact that only the most sensitive and the first activated receptors are important for odor inhibitors. Yes.
Did you try to present both odors in different ratios and to see like kind of psychometric curves?
Yes, we tried, but that's a bit. I just give a sense so people understand how we. I can talk about all this stuff and how it's worked. I just try to get a feeling, ideas what we're doing a lot to prove this idea, to prove this concept. But sorry, it changes, but it's not creeping very long. It's just slightly changing the time.
Yes. So more similar odors, more longer windows?
Very significantly. So if you do, if you do more similar odors, they slightly, you need a little bit longer time, but not the time to develop all the platform activity, not all the time that all the receptors got activated for this concentration. That is super important. Yes?
So I'm not sure I see why this is an evidence of the fact that the animal used this order of activation. Because it could be also that the time that you leave the animal the possibility to probe the odor is going to give you some sort of a signal to noise ratio between the signal and whatever smooth activity you have. So I mean, if you were able to for instance forbid or stop the activation in the first 50 milliseconds and see that in that case it's a different. But in that, what you do
is
you're just leaving a certain window, but you don't know if the 10 to 15 milliseconds is more or less important than the 50 to 100 milliseconds.
Mm-hmm. This is hard experiment. We cannot, because if you perturb anything now, you also perturb later. You see what I'm saying? I cannot magically take away only the beginning of the sniff and not perturbing the later of the sniff. This is a very important caveat. So what I'm telling that the first information, if I perturb the system 100 milliseconds, the old information was the first 100 milliseconds, it's sufficient to do the right decision. I did not prove that animal cannot use this information to make a decision. Because I cannot perturb the beginning of the sniff cycle without perturbing there.
And the sniff cycle is 100 milliseconds, right?
Say it again?
The sniff cycle.
Sorry. I'm a little bit confused. The time of the. So the sniff cycle is usually. The breathing frequency, normal breathing frequency is about 3 hertz of the mouse. In humans, it's half a hertz. And everything happening here, the most important part here. Now, this is the sniff cycle. The odor concentration, actually, there was some measurement, it develops kind of slowly and glomerular receptors. Some of them are activated here. So if you do stationary experiments like I showed at the beginning, this picture formed during, let's say, 300, 500 milliseconds. But that's not what animals pay attention to. Animals pay attention to the very first few receptors. Yes.
You mentioned that you don't have access from the experiment, from timing information. I assume you do some sort of calcium imaging to get all this at the same time. Right. What stops you from doing that experiment and while the mouse is still there, stick an electrode into one glomerulus of interest and see whether the timing in fact shifts with concentration?
First of all, it's hard to stick in the glomerulus because glomerulus is actually sort of cell. It's a bunch of axons and a bunch of... So it's a place where about 1,000 axons of receptor neurons come together and a bunch of dendrites come to the next level of cells. But we actually have to do this. It stops me only 24/7 hours a day. You're right. Maybe what is sensitive guys with the other stuff? Last question. I would like to switch the gear. Okay.
I was just wondering, in your paradigm, the mouse like really learn how to distinguish the two others really fast, and they're super good probably because they've learned also how to distinguish them. If you try to maybe test the same idea of the oncogenetic masking in a context where the animal would do maybe fear conditioning or something or another.
No, I did not. I did not, and the problem with that actually is kind of for the analysis. The problem with this experiment is the following. So we actually develop the task that mouse is doing the task independent of the mask. I don't present mask all the time. And very rarely I present the mask. So mouse develops a strategy to identify the orders, and sometimes we control. So you go left, go right, go left. You know the strategy, and sometimes I flash the light. And you deal with what you have. All fear conditioning always, if somebody has an idea from people in the field, I'll be very happy to talk. I don't know how to do the system. Okay, so I give you the feeling what can be done and what we're doing in the lab to understand the other coding and to say that the first few more sensitive receptors are important for what we're doing. Now I would like to build on it and present some ideas how other field, how other space can be represented in the mouse brain, given that we postulate now this idea. So I erase all the experimental part. Now it will be mostly speculation theory. That means that it's basically all models are wrong, some of them are useful. So we'll see how far we can go, how useful this will be, but I will explain what the usefulness of this approach. And the goal is not so comfortable, but that's the idea. Can we go from the perception to the from the perception to the perception? We start with the very beginning, so one order activation to one receptor is defined by the affinity. Okay? And as I draw the curve, it looks like this. So the postulates of our model is the following. First, the privacy model, it will be defined by parameter P, privacy.
Primacy.
It's how many receptors do we need to identify the order. This will be the parameter of the theory. In reality, I don't believe it's fixed parameter. But as a physicist, I can allow myself to fix it. Now, we need to talk about dimensionality. And then we'll talk about dimensionality of the order space a little bit later. Because dimensionality of the order space is super, super important stuff. What do I mean by dimensionality? Imagine I presented you orange, and I presented a lemon. An apple. And this is very different products. And then suddenly I presented a lemon that you haven't explored before. Intuitively, you feel that the lemon is closer to orange than to apple. So in your brain, you have a metric distance between the stimuli. And this metric, as soon as you start talking about metric distance, you can start thinking about what dimensionality of this. Orange, lemon, rose, what the dimensionality of this field. So if the dimensionality of the other field is big, we're kind of doomed and we walk away from these ideas. But there's accumulating evidence that the dimensionality of the other field or other space is relatively low, about let's say 6-8 dimensions. So to build this, any kind of theory of law of function, we postulate the dimensionality is relatively low, and I don't know what is P, I don't know what is D here. The next ideas I'll develop as I described the theory. And then come back again to the dimensionality, how it can be defined. This order, is, again, the privacy idea that only the first few are important for the idea. Now, let's make a very simple model for the creature. It has multiple receptors, but lives in the universe that has only two chemicals.
So just briefly, what do you mean by dimensionality here? Those are descriptors, so you would have 60 descriptors to...
No, it's more or less, you know, how many variables you need to describe per cell. And
But then you should imitate one... smelled by combination of the other, right?
And that will be part of the story.
Okay.
I probably start talking about dimension too early, so let's talk about it just later. Now imagine we have a universe that has two chemicals, and then the receptor can be fully described by affinity to chemical B and chemical A. So this receptor super have high affinity to chemical B and low affinity to chemical A. This receptor opposite, and our creature, model creature, has multiple receptors that are fully defined by these Okay, I finish. Now, what happens when we increase the concentration of the odor, let's say A? If you come here, so as I said, if you fix this star bar to 1, you basically divide, this is KC equal 1, KACA equal 1, you divide this to active, this is not active, okay? Now, what that equivalent to, that if you move the concentration from low to high, you first excite this receptor, and then you excite this receptor. This is to the most concentrated receptor. And assuming P equal 2 in this model, this will be your order identity. Okay? Now, let's do the same thing with order B. We're moving from top, and we excite this receptor. This is two most sensitive receptors. So this is order identity for order B. Now, this creature lives in the two-dimensional world, and we can randomly mix the odors. How receptor will respond to the mixture? To respond to the mixture, we can, again, this is another simplification, we can write the following. You can derive it from kinetic equation, but it's written very simple. So you can have two odors interact with the receptor independently, and they just compete for the spot. Who comes first? What call? And you can derive from the same ideas, but writing a little bit. I don't want to go again. This is simplification. And the important part of the simplification is that ligand and ligand don't interact. So don't inhibit each other. It's just pure competitive value. Let's rewrite it. We take concentration out of the arrow, out of the bracket, and here we have CA divided by CKA plus CB divided by CKB. This is vector K, and this is vector Q, unity vector, that is fully defined by the ratio between components. So I can write it as CQK. So for given mixture, we define the vector Q, and we project all the receptors to this axis. Okay? That was the level of creation. So the same thing, like we move along this axis, now we start moving along this axis when we increase concentration. This is letter C. And the first two receptors that got activated will be these two. Okay, so if this is perceptor for order A, this is B, this is AB. The first most trivial prediction of this model, very simple model, that the primacy set of the mixture consists of some, may have some receptors that are not primacy, not belong to primacy set of individual organs. And that's very important for function, because maybe that's what makes a gestalt. When you smell the odor, you actually don't identify this component. This is a very different perception. This is what makes your coffee, make your mixture. Now, we working in the lab trying to kind of carefully measure all these effects, and the work is far in progress. We're just at the very beginning. But we do see some effects that this receptor can be activated earlier or at lower concentration than the receptors that are activated first activated at the individual mixture. Now, let's make our argument a little bit further. Let's expose our animal to all possible mixture. What that means, we need to rotate vector Q. And that cover all possible primacy sets, okay? And all possible primacy sets, it is receptor 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. We have four possible primacy sets here. A second, I will define it differently. We have perceptor alpha, beta, gamma, and delta. Okay. There are a few conclusions from this story. First of all, this receptor is never been primary for any of the possible chemicals in this universe. So there's no point of keeping it as an repertoire of the receptors, and the receptor may vanish during evolution. So the next assumption here is that evolution actually removes all the receptors that are not primary, that are not primary for at least one odor. So the odor receptors will lie on a very shallow, narrow manifold that we call primacy hull, that is one dimension below the dimensionality of the system. The second conclusion is actually also very important. There is no order in this universe that activates receptor 1 and 5 together. So not all possible combination is used. So in this universe, 1 and 2 can be activated, 2 and 3, 3 and 4, but even 2 and 5 are not possible. So we don't need to waste biological energy to, let's say, hook up this receptor, because this order will never be activated. Basically, only one, so we need to kind of, the nose knows what kind of receptors it has and what kind of chemicals in the environment, so we can start building the wiring there. Before talking about wiring, that I will talk in the next few minutes, if I have time. Okay, so this is two-dimensional case. You know, it's two, what's special about it? Okay, if it's three-dimensional, okay, you can still visualize the system. It's kind of maybe surface like this. And what's interesting here, that order, in our case, if P equal 2, is segment of the surface. P equal 3, it will be triangle. P equal 4, it will be tetrahedron, and so on and so forth. So we can start building the geometrical representation of the orders on this lower dimensional manifold primacy hull. It has very peculiar property that we argue a lot with Alex, for example. It's not just a convex hull, because, for example, receptor sitting here, it still can be primary, but not, it's not on a convex surface. But I kind of, we leave it for efficient analysis of mathematical analysis and so on and so forth. The idea, this is some kind of shallow manifold in n-1 dimensions that embed all possible orders that are presented like, you know, simplexes. This is segment, triangle, tetrahedron, and on and on and on. Okay, but that is three-dimensional. You know, I just mentioned to you that we may have million of orders. How should we deal with it? This is a hard problem. And that's where the dimensionality argument comes into the play. If the dimensionality of our space is million, I leave the topic, I move away, it's not important. But we have a hope to understand the dimensionality of this field in the following way. Let's come back to this equation. F 1 minus F equals C Q K. So when this is equal to 1, the ratio, I can rewrite it in the following way. I can rewrite it like 1 over C threshold equal QK. C threshold is measurable. And I can start building the matrix that I told you of inverse threshold. Now, this is actually in original coordinate, if Q equal 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, and so on, so how we make a measurement, it's known. But let's assume that we don't know that, and let's find the representation of our matrix, which is orders, M orders, and N receptors, as representation of two matrices, receptors and orders, with internal dimensionality. The proof will be in the pudding. It requires a lot of measurement, but if that matrix that we measure of 1 over C threshold can be decomposed to the low dimensional matrix of the defined receptors and orders, then this will be the basic orders in this space. That is a biological, not psychophysical, but biological approach to find the basis in this space. And it requires a lot of measurement. And, you know, we try to find the the way how to do it statistically, because there's no chance we can fill all these metrics completely. So what if we start filling it randomly? And there's a lot of work going on now, and Alex is a kind of helping with this. Alex basically the lead in this direction. But we can also start analyzing the relationship between orders by combining. So the orders can interact by adjacent nodes. If they have a single node interaction or two nodes, this is adjacent orders, or they don't interact at all, they don't have anything together, and so on and so forth. And statistics of this interaction can be measured even not having all the possible metrics. Again, I'm not going to talk about it, just too much of the details, and find Alex and talk about the statistics. Yes?
There's a practical problem with the M, right? I mean, you're going to be horribly subsampling the actual universe of orders. So how do we know, you get the right statistics?
I don't, but what's interesting here, I can start building these metrics and start doing dimensionality reduction, and what I will be plotting in each time, this is M, and I will be plotting the internal dimension. And it goes like this, M equal 1, D equal 1, M equal 2, then someone will just start betting. Now, I never can prove that you find some order that it jumps. But the fact that the dimensionality will be low, I will be able to see with relatively a small number of orders, that's exactly what we tried to achieve today in the lab. Am I run out of time, or I can say a little bit about wiring?
Maybe 1 minute.
1 minute. So basically, this structure, the fact that the orders allocated, a receptor allocated very specific over dimensional structure, have very strong, very interesting prediction that they need to be wired in a very specific manner. Basically, receptor, I will come to the two dimensional model again, and the idea is very simple. Is this is a receptor in the nose, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And we need to wire them in a very specific way. Because one of the way neural system is working is when it's looking for coincidence. And 1 and 5 are never coincident, so we don't need to wire them together. We can save on the neural hardware, you wire 1 and 2, 2 and 3, 3 and 4, and 5, and we can start building them. Network that actually knows about the structure of the external field. It's a very hot subject in the field. The problem, so this is a very general problem, because if you think about it, in the brain, you know that these 2 points far away and these 2 points close to each other, because you have, partially because you have a retina topical projection. The point on the retina close one, projected close one in the cortex, so you know the internal distances. The reason why this is a very hard problem to map more than 2 dimensions, because cortex is kind of 2-dimensional surface, and now you need to map 5-dimensional field and preserve the dimensionality. But maybe if you have the structure, you will be able to preserve the dimensionality through the wiring. I leave the rest to the discussion, and this a lot will say how to form these models, how to form this wiring. I can talk about it more and more and more. But please address questions, find us and find Alex, who's
one person.
Yeah.
So just use your 2-dimensional as an example. So the number of receptors seems to go linearly as the number of orders you are able to detect. So at least you can make a prediction.
But
no, I know. So then you can extrapolate to high dimension. So in 2 will be a square root of n, and the other it will be the cubic of n. So if you look at the numbers.
No, it also depends on p.
But to a larger degree, just a geometry gives you the scaling. If you only count the neighbors, and if you. So do you, in other words, in principle, you can say what's the diet of mice compared to the diet of human compared to the diet of fly. That gives you the numbers, and then that will be one scaling. and compare it to the number of receptors, that might tell you a little bit about the primary, the dimension of the primary odor, if you like.
That I'm not sure we'll be able to pull out, because one interesting point here, that receptors and dimensionality can be very different. So receptors, differently from vision, when we have basically three receptor, three dimensions, here's slightly different. So if you remember this picture that we have, receptors are actually not dimensionality in this system, but a pixel that looking outside this sector of the chemical space, in this low-dimensional space. So this is like retina cell. We're looking at a two-dimensional world with individual receptors, and you perceive two-dimensional picture. Now, this receptor is responsible for this sector. This is responsible for this sector in six-dimensional space. My imagination fails here.
But
at least
Lars? So do myself olfactory dreams. Is there spontaneous activity in olfactory bulb? Can you just measure correlation matrix and pull out the rank?
I don't know. It's it's an interesting line of thoughts of finding the correlation matrix here. I'm not sure that it's so easily interpretable, and I don't know how to ask this question to the mice. No, it's actually...
Yeah, they wake up when they smell something nice.
So, Alex, actually, you tried to measure the dimensionality of the different level of the activity, right? But we're thinking about it. Sorry, I don't know.
I'm struggling with this idea of dimensionality. In a two-dimensional case, obviously, the space is rather easy to understand, and it really makes a difference to have stuff confined to a surface and confined to neighbors. But as you increase the dimensionality, two things happen. First of all, if you just scatter stuff randomly by a Gaussian process in sort of roughly a 10-dimensional sphere, most of it will, in fact, end up on the surface.
Yes.
So the demand that stuff lies on the surface becomes less constraining. And the other thing that happens is if you have a relatively small number of points on the surface, most of them are far away from each other in the two-dimensional case, but I think that the distances between them become much more similar in the high-dimensional case.
So basically what we're looking for, if we can estimate somehow the dimensionality of the space. Because you're absolutely right, if you go to the higher dimensions, then all the points will be on the surface, and this is some transition that every segment is actually on the perimeter, and it basically became, you can create any kind of
concept. Right. So then the constraints on wiring, which is a really attractive part
and
of your theory.
The fact that you can say that lemon is closer to orange than to apple is actually kind of promising one, that maybe animal has this metric and dimensionality is not so hard. Then they put it the argument otherwise. Otherwise, it would be extremely hard to understand the orders.
Yeah.
That's our hope, guys. We're working on that. But if the dimensionality is high, as I tell you about four times, it's a completely different problem.
So how much would high be?
5, 8, 6, 8. I don't know. Maybe Alex can come in because we do some modeling and kind of how to wire these 5, 6, 7 dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
All this can be done by some numerics and some analysis. Alex is involved. But this is a general framework that we try to understand our function. And it's kind of built from now we'll have a corollary, a specific percept, how percept organized in the structure of the field in the style that has been more than 100 years ago on the two-dimensional color space. Let's say, but we're not here yet.
We can continue the discussion afterwards. Thank you very much.